got the message this morning and maybe next Sunday, and we'll be finished with our burden on vision. So the vision, Proverbs 29:18 says that where there's no vision, the people perish. And but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. I believe this scripture, as I've said several times now, is very timeless. It applied to Solomon and his generation. It applies to us. We don't have a vision for life if we don't have a vision for the things that is necessary in life, for our temporal things or our spiritual things. Things are going to deteriorate. I've been very impressed. Just mention this briefly in Daniel, the 10th chapter, with Daniel's desire for vision and how that he fasted for 3 weeks or was in mourning. Maybe he was fasting for 3 weeks. I'm not real sure. It says he ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine into my mouth. I don't know if that means that he only ate the things that were just barely kept him alive, but he was serious about getting something from the Lord. And that's what I want to impress on us through this series of messages I feel like the Lord's inspired us with, is that we would be serious about getting something for ourselves for the Lord. What does the Lord want from me, and how should I approach life? Our thoughts have come quite a ways from where we started, and letting you know that I felt like we have to have a vision as a very, very small child, even before we are conscious of having a vision. I believe that we have something going on in our mind, even these little children that are not talking to us. I think they're thinking about what I want to do. They see that out there. I know my mother, I've told you that story about my mother being concerned about me because I was mumbling under my breath and rubbing my hands together, and I wasn't really talking, and she thought I was maybe mentally handicapped, and someone advised her that when he's old enough to do what he's thinking about with his hands, I think he'll be all right. And I think it pretty much turned out that way. I'm thankful for someone that was older and wiser and able to give my mother some insight many years ago. But we find as we progress in life, when we get past those formative years when we're just learning how to walk and talk and do things with our hands and climb and be mischievous and all that, we go from there to that time where it ends up in adolescence, and our parents are still very much supervising and guiding our vision. And I'm thankful for the many times that my parents were able to say, "Nope, you're looking at that wrong." And then I remember the time that I was trying to argue with my dad about what I thought was right and he knew was right. And Dad was wise enough to say, "You can believe what you want to, but you're wrong." And my parents helped me with my vision and my perspective of what life was all about all the time I was growing up, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful today that if we find ourselves in a situation in life to be less than what God's perspective really is for us. And have you ever come to a place in life that you realized you was looking at something wrong? I have. I just came to, and there's been some times that you come to those places and it's like, "Oh, I don't even know if I can face my coworkers, or I don't know if I can face my family or my spouse or the people I go to school with or what." I've been thinking about this so wrong, and now that I see, now that I understand, I feel so foolish or so inadequate. I've had those times, and I'm guessing that I'm not strange that y'all have had those times too. But I'm so glad that when we realize that something's not panning out like it should, we can have vision correction. I'm thankful that there's such a thing as glasses, because I'm going to tell you, if I take these off, I can see everybody and I recognize you and I know who you are, but I cannot read what's on the page. I mean, maybe if I had a really, really bright light and I could get away far enough, I might be able to, but I just can't read it anymore without my glasses. But there's more than just being able to see. There's a place over here in Joplin that I guess they're still there, that tout their services as a vision place. And one of the things they tell you is, if you go, what do they call it, honey? Vision therapy. That's what I should have said. They do vision therapy. And just because somebody sees doesn't mean that they see it correctly. In other words, somebody that has dyslexia can see, but they're not seeing things the way it really is. Things are kind of mixed up. I don't know why this happens, but they have developed some therapy to help people see correctly. So if any of us, and anything that we share here, if we feel like, oh my, that's, I can see, I understand now, I've been looking at this wrong, I'm thankful that the Lord has therapy, He has vision correction for us, and He can help us to go from where we're at now down the path that He would like for us to go. There's a scripture in 2 Chronicles I'd like to turn to first. And doesn't say anything about vision, but I think it kind of stresses the point of us being able to get back on track. 2 Chronicles, the 7th chapter and the 14th verse. Many of you know this verse and you know how valid it is for us. It says, "If my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land." I believe that when we find ourselves in a place that our vision has been, we recognize it hasn't been what it should have been, and we come to the place and say, "Lord, help me. I need my vision fixed. I need to be able to have the vision you would have for me in this particular area." I believe the Lord is willing and able to help us in that. Last Sunday, or Sunday before last, we talked about our spiritual vision. I believe it's very, very essential that we have a personal spiritual vision. Last Sunday, we talked about a vision for our marriage. And I believe that's very important, that we not only have a vision about marriage before we get married, but a vision during our marriage and for the long term, that the Lord would help us stay on track. So today I'd like for our topic to be parenting. And I'd like to say that if a young couple gets married and they don't have a desire to have children, there is usually some kind of deep-seated issue that needs resolution. I said usually. It's just, so if you have a desire for children, if you're a young person, and if you're an older parent, or maybe now many of us here are grandparents, or maybe you're looking at being a great-grandparent, or I don't know. It's important for us to have the right vision and a balanced vision. It's hard for us to have the right vision for being a parent if we don't have a correct spiritual vision and we don't have the right vision about what marriage is. If we look at marriage as some kind of avenue to gratify me, then most likely any vision that we have about parenting is going to be distorted too. And any vision, if we don't have the right vision of being in tune spiritually with God, when it comes to be parents, we're going to have some things mixed up there too. And one of the things we said earlier is vision is cumulative. Once we have a vision for something and we start obtaining what that vision includes, then our vision, our horizon of our vision is going to go a little higher. Yesterday, I think this was yesterday anyway, Anita and I were going back to the house. Yeah, we had taken Evelyn by Darren and Caitlin's, and we were going to the house, and we turned on a county road, and this county road has a hill, and when we turned on the road, there was a tractor ahead of us pulling a bush hog, and we started up this hill, and I can't see if there's a car coming. Of course, I'm sitting down quite a bit lower, and this fella in the tractor, he's sitting way up high, you know, he could see over the hill. So we didn't get very far, and the fella in the tractor, he was motioning me to come around. And why could he do that? It's because he could see, he had a vantage point that I couldn't see from. And that's the thing about our vision. When we have a vision for one thing, it enables us to be able to have a vision for something else. So that's why I said it's important for us to have a spiritual vision. It's important for us to have a vision for marriage. And then it's important for us to have a vision of being a parent. And all of these things are visions that we really need to seek the Lord for, like Daniel did. Lord, help me to get the vision you want. I want to have the right thing. I'm willing to work for a vision. It's beyond something my parents has gotten. My parents are not here any longer. There's times I'd like to ask them questions, but I can't now. So now it's up to me to have that vision for myself. So as a parent, I'd like to go to 127th Psalm. I'll begin reading in verse 3. It says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Who shall not be ashamed? The children?" I believe that's what he's talking about. "And they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." Now, here's what, every time I read this, these little verses in Psalms 127, I get this sensation of a good relationship between parents and a child. I get a realization that there has been a vision involved here. A vision of being a good parent. A vision of having a good marriage. A vision of having a relationship with the Lord. And he says here that children are a heritage of the Lord. I believe children are a blessing from God. They're not consequences. They are not a plague on people. They are a blessing of the Lord. And we must have the vision of that. If we got that wrong, we're going to have trouble being a parent. It says, "As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth." It's important for us to recognize that our children are going to carry on the things that we instill in them as parents. It's important we recognize that. It's important that we have a vision of what we put into their little minds and in their little characters and how we train them. But listen to that last verse. "Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed. The children shall have confidence." Did you know if you have a vision about being a parent, if you have a vision about being able to be a godly parent, a spiritual leader, a leader in your relationship with your spouse, did you know that your children will have confidence? They won't be ashamed. And then it says, "But they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." You know, an enemy is confrontation. An enemy is a threat. An enemy is something that is intimidating. And he says here that the man that has these kind of children and recognize, he says that these children are like arrows in the hand of a mighty man. It's going to take strength to be a good parent. It's going to take a vision to be a good parent. But the end result is the children shall not be intimidated or fearful. They're going to have confidence. And they're going to be able to not only have confidence for their little personal things, but they're going to be able to speak with the enemies that come to the gate, that come to the borders, that come to the knocking on the door, so to speak. Don't you want your children to be strong and to be able to speak with the enemies at the gate? I do. Proverbs 22:6. I've got three areas that I want us to kind of focus on this morning in being a parent that is important for us to get a hold of. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it." It's important for us as a parent to have a vision that we are going to be training our children. I believe God made mankind to have dominion over everything else in creation. He says he gave man dominion over there in Genesis. Remember that? And I believe that he intends for us today to have mankind to have dominion over everything that's in part of creation. But did you know that mankind enters this world with the least amount of instinct of all creation? You know that we have to be trained in so many, we are so vulnerable when we get here. When the new little baby that arrived last night, I'm going to tell you, if they don't start, their instincts are basically just to express discomfort and know how to take in nourishment. They don't have any, you know, there are, I was reading about some, like gazelle or something like that, some antelope looking animal, that from the time they get here, within like minutes, they've got to be able to run top speed to elude predators. Now there is no, how much of you would expect a child that was born into your home to be able to get up and run within 20 minutes after they was born? We don't expect it. They can't even take the first step. But we feel like a baby is really strong if they can hold their head up for a few seconds. And it bobbles around a little bit and down it goes again. We feel, oh, that baby's pretty strong. So there is so much training that has to be done. And we enter this world so vulnerable and so helpless. So the realization as a parent, this needs to be in our vision. We must be willing to train. Now, my dad, when he was, when I was a little guy, especially, I'd look at my dad and he'd comb his hair over and somehow he had his hair was straight, just like mine. I mean, zero curl to it at all. And he would comb his hair over, and he had this little flip in his hair. I don't know if any of y'all knew my dad, but anyway, how do you do that, Dad? What makes your hair do that? Because he wasn't the kind that put it in place and sprayed it down with something. No, he didn't do that. But he had trained his hair, how did he do it? It took over and over and over and over and over again. I can't say over enough. So here's the thing we got to remember when you're training is you have to be consistent and you have to repeat it over and over and over and over again. Same way with children. If you go read in the book of Proverbs, I won't read all these because we'd be here a while, but there's at least 23 verses in Proverbs that says, "My son." And then it has some instruction. Did you know that you set out to be a parent and you're going to say, my son, here's what I want you to do. And you may have to say the same instructions It'll be more than 23. You will have to say it over and over again. Mama said, Daddy said, don't do this. Daddy said when you, to close the door, to open the door, whatever it is, you will do this over and over again. And this is part of the vision that we must have. If you approach parenting like, I told them, they didn't listen, I guess they just can't learn. I'm going to tell you, we need some vision correction. It takes repeating. This is training. This is not lecturing. It's not proving guilty or anything like that. It's training. It takes over and over and over again. In Romans, the second chapter, let's go there and notice a verse. It's not talking about child training necessarily, although today I'd like to apply it there. Let's go to Romans, the second chapter. We're still talking about training with the help of the Lord. Romans chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. He says, who shall render to every man according to his deeds? This is talking about God. And the end result. And he says in verse 7, to them who by patient continuance and well-doing seek for glory, honor, and immortality, eternal life. So he's talking about the spirit. Remember how we got to have a spiritual vision for ourselves? And he's talking here about individuals that have the spiritual vision and they are seeking for glory and honor and immortality. The end result or the reward for that is eternal life. But how do they get that? It's by patient continuance and well-doing. Part of training is patient continuance and well-doing. And I'm going to tell you, this is the reason children have two parents. There are going to be times that the mother is completely exasperated and the father has to say, we've got to do it again. We're going to have to tell them again. We're going to have to show them again. We're going to have to take their little hand and put it over here and say, no, no, one more time. And there's going to be times that the father has had it up to here. And he is ready to punish them. And the mother says, no, I think we need to give them another chance. I think we need to train them another time. That's why we have two parents, all right? Otherwise, there'd be more consequences, I'm afraid. Let's go to Galatians, the sixth chapter, and notice another verse. Still talking about training here. Galatians chapter 6, in verse 9, he says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Do you know, one of the most fearful things that a parent can have is have a child that doesn't seem to get it as far as behavior. And they have went over this, whatever this particular issue is, over and over and over again. And every time, they violate your expectations. And then you have to send them off to school. Or they go to spend the weekend with grandpa and grandma or with some friends or something. I'm talking about young children. And then you're kind of apprehensive, but you try to find out, well, how did they behave while they was at your house? And they say, oh, you have the best little boy or the best little girl. They didn't cause us any trouble. Anytime we told them to do something, they just responded. And it's like, why don't they do this at home? But the point is that we have to not be weary in well-doing. We have to keep on. This is part of the vision. I'm speaking from experience. In 2 Thessalonians 3 and 13, Paul says pretty much the same thing. And this is three different places in the New Testament. If you get that, read that for us. If we get it before I get there. 2 Thessalonians 3 and 13.
Would you rather be not weary in well
don't be weary in well-doing. Paul said this three different places to three different groups of people. So I feel like it has to apply to us today. Be not weary in well-doing. This has to be part of our vision. In Deuteronomy, the sixth chapter, I'd like to move to just a little bit different topic now as far as having a vision for a parent. First off, in our vision, we as a parent, we must be prepared to train. And training is not telling them once. Okay, training is repetitive. It has to be. But if we go to Deuteronomy, the sixth chapter, beginning in verse 6, it says, "And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine hand, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates." I'm now wanting to address a little bit our atmosphere and how we go about training and the material that we use. To train takes repetition. It takes being not weary and doing the right thing. But we have to create an atmosphere that's conducive to learning. If we have a lot of turmoil and distraction, no one learns very well. If right now, I know that what I'm saying may not be the most captivating for everyone here, but if what I'm trying to say this morning, if there was someone in the back room back here that was rattling pots and pans and making noise, and maybe every once in a while we heard a big bump in the floor and a scrape and a screech and some more rattling and some muttering and some mumbling, and you couldn't quite make out what was going on. And then if there was somebody out here that maybe was making some other kind of noise, we've been here in service when somebody has been working on some old car, and we've heard that thing start up three or four times or a dozen times during service, and maybe someone's running a grinder, and maybe somebody else is playing music or something. All of that kind of background noise is going to cause a distraction, and no matter how much we try to focus on what's being said, there's going to be some things we miss. So our atmosphere and the environment we create, and it really does make a difference in how effective that training is. This is part of our vision. You want your child to be able to learn. You want them to be able to be trained. You want them to be able to be the ones that can answer the enemy at the gate. Got to be patient and well-doing. We got to create. What did they say here? How are you going to teach your children? By the way you live. We've got to live it before them. We've got to have an atmosphere that's conducive for them. I got to do it myself. If I'm going to say, be respectful, then I've got to be respectful. If I'm being diligent about if I'm trying to teach my children to be diligent about doing their work, I have to be diligent about my work. If I want them to be neat and tidy, then I have to be neat and tidy. It's the way. It's the atmosphere. We must have the principles that we want our children to learn in our own hearts. We must use our home atmosphere to guide them and instruct them. Our life and our character is a textbook that they're going to read. I'd like to go to Philippians, the fourth chapter and the ninth verse, to reinforce what we just said there. Go to Philippians 4 and 9, I believe it is. He says, "For those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace shall be with you." So we want the training to be effectual. We want to try to create an atmosphere that's conducive for learning, but we must be able to live it before them so that they can recognize this is something that's right. Mom or dad, both of them, this is the way they live. This is this is the way they conduct themselves, and I want to be like that. And the last point that I want to dwell on a little bit is discipline. So training, vision must include training. It's a lot of repetition. Our vision for parenting must include the atmosphere that we create. And I'd like to say something about atmosphere. All of you know that I'm a mechanic by trade. And I don't believe that my parents set out to make me a mechanic. But they allowed me to cultivate a propensity that I had. All right? My dad really liked to get us, if they bought us any kind of toy, he liked for it to be something that caused us to think a little bit. And that's why I had Legos, lots of them. And that's why I had Tinker Toys. And that's why that when my my uncle had got disenchanted, he was 10 years older than me, and when he got disenchanted with his little erector set that had all the little nuts and bolts in it, he got disenchanted with that and he was going to get rid of it. I was offended that my parents didn't get it for me. They gave it to another cousin. And I thought I needed it. But I was small enough, they thought I might swallow some of that stuff. So anyway, I don't know. I just remember them having those kind of things when I was too small to be outside, kind of unsupervised. But as I got older, I've told the boys, and some of you others, I've told them, my dad would go to the city dump to haul off our tin cans and other stuff. We didn't have a garbage service back then. And he would go to the city dump to haul off this stuff, and he'd always bring something home from the dump. When we were small, he brought home tricycles. Got a little bigger, he brought home bicycles. My parents never bought me a new bicycle. I bought my first new bicycle myself. But my dad would bring home bicycles or pieces of bicycles. And we had all kinds of parts. And when we were little, he was out there helping us. And we was taking wheels off of one or a seat off of one and putting it on another one. And we had a bicycle and a tricycle as time went on, for everybody in the neighborhood that wanted to come over and play with us. We had a flock of tricycles. I can remember vaguely. We had five or six or seven tricycles, various sizes and shapes. And then when it got bicycle time, we always had an extra bicycle. If somebody come home with us, yeah, we got an extra bicycle. We can go ride around the block in a bicycle. And as time went on, it ended up being lawnmowers. Dad would bring one home that had a handlebar missing or wheels missing or something. And we had them. We'd take them apart, and we had pieces in boxes, and we spent hours and hours out there, my brother and I, taking things apart and putting them together and trying to make this fit on something else. And what we entertained ourselves with that. But what I'm trying to say is they made an atmosphere that was conducive for us to learn and to train us. And you know, today I think we need more of that and less video games and excitement and entertainment in that range. And we grew up. By the time we were 12 years old, we had people bringing, neighbors bringing lawnmowers across the street for us to work on, and people thinking we could fix stuff. Anyway. I'm just trying to tell you that this atmosphere that you create is so important, not just in these kind of things, but in the spiritual realm. Take young parents, old parents, grandparents, whatever, take time to have family worship with your children and your grandchildren. When I went to see my grandpa and grandma, they always had family worship. They never got too busy in their visiting and their adult stuff that they didn't stop and have family worship. And Grandpa always read to me Ephesians 6 chapter, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." He read that to us every time. He was willing to train us, you see. And this is the thing we have to do. We have to have a vision of this. Yes, you know, do I think he got tired of pulling it? He sat in his chair and he pulled that New Testament out of the side pocket of his recliner and he'd open it up. I knew what he's, and he got to where he'd ask us, boys, what do you think I'm going to read tonight? It has to be Ephesians, the 6th chapter, because that's what he always read to us. And I guess he thought we really needed it. I don't know. But, you know, I'm just trying to paint a picture of having a vision for our children and for being a parent. Then I'd like to go to discipline in the last part of our little thought here. I'd like to go to Hebrews, the 12th chapter. And begin reading about the 5th verse. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 5. He says, "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons, for what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nonetheless, afterwards it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest they which be lame be turned out of the way, and let it rather be healed." The Lord is interested in us not only accepting chastisement from Him, but recognizing that discipline and chastisement that comes with discipline is part of being a parent and in your vision. I'm not going to tell you that there is only one way to discipline children and or anything like that. But, you know, he says here that no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous. It's not designed to be joyous. Chastisement and discipline is designed to help us realize that there's consequences for misbehavior and not conducting ourselves the way we've been trained. You know, I got lots of chastisement. And maybe this is why Grandpa always read to us, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." I've heard from another source that there were others that felt like my brother and I was some of the most mischievous little guys that ever there was, and they hoped that... we were concerned to them, I guess. I don't know what I did, but I know my parents worked on me a lot. All right, they worked on me a lot, and you know, it's not chastisement. It's, you know, the scripture here in Hebrews, he talks about the fathers of the flesh chastising us after their own pleasure. Folks, listen, it's not talking about the fathers enjoying chastening their children. All right, that's not what he's saying. He's saying they chose the direction that they were trying to guide their children in. And son or daughter, if you don't do this, there's going to be a consequence. And whatever that consequence is, the father follows through with that and makes sure the child is being, that's part of training. Chastisement is, you see. In Proverbs, the 3rd chapter, 12th verse, maybe we'll go over there, try to read just a few more verses here before we finish. But I want us to think about the discipline that is necessary for us to get the message. You know, many times we don't get the message in training, and many times we don't get the message from the environment that everybody, you can have everything perfect for someone to learn. But if they're chasing rabbits, they're not going to learn. I had a teacher in high school that one of his favorite things to do was catch you chasing rabbits, as he called. And he'd be up there. The classroom was quiet. Nobody was talking. There wasn't any band playing in the next room. It was a learning conducive atmosphere. Algebra 1, ninth grade. He'd be up at the chalkboard putting up the example, and he'd be teaching whatever lesson it was that day. And, you know, I mean, if the windows on the side of the classroom didn't have curtains on it, and if the guy that cut the grass went by with the lawnmower, or if there was a car that went by or anything like that, it was like, I wonder who that was, you know. He was kind of, and if he asked a question and said, okay, and he called you by name and says, okay, Rodney, what do we put in the place of this X up here? Or how would you solve this equation? And you said, he said, exactly. He said, I caught you chasing rabbits. And, you know, many times at those times, we feel kind of chastised. I mean, there's nothing like getting your name called out in class and then the teacher telling you that he caught you chasing rabbits, right? Well, we don't like chastisement. We don't like being pointed out that we wasn't paying attention. It's part of being a parent. It's part of raising children. Proverbs, the 3rd chapter and the 12th verse says, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. The Lord wants to correct us. The Lord wants us to get the message. In Proverbs 13 and 24, he says here, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. I'm not saying that corporal punishment is the only type of discipline that can be administered. There's times that it's necessary. But I will tell you something that is important for us to recognize. If you always think what your child does is cute, and you can't ever bring yourself to discipline them, I'm asking you to readjust your vision. Because, you know what I'd like? I'd like for my grandchildren, I'd like to think everything they did was cute and leave all of the responsibility for disciplining them on their parents. That's what I'd like. And that's the way it really ought to be, I think. But anyway, you know, there are many times that grandchildren come along and the parents think everything they're doing is cute. And the grandparents have to end up saying, look, you know, you don't act like that when you're at grandpa's house. You don't do that with grandma's stuff, whatever it is. This is not acceptable behavior, you see. He says, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. What's he talking about? Just every third day, once a week? No, he's talking about when he needs it. They're going to need it. Some of them need it more than others. There was a time, there was a phase that my brother and I went through. I've told people that I think we got paddled at least once a day. We averaged one a day for fighting. Maybe that's why they thought we were needed a lot of help. I don't know. But we got into lots of scuffles. And my mother, it seemed like, had to paddle us almost. We didn't really hate each other. We just started out wrestling and we ended up having a squabble. And the next thing we knew, we had to be disciplined. Because one of us was hollering and the other one was hurting. It's just the way it was. And we had to have a lot of correction. I'm thankful we grew out of that. We don't fight anymore. In Proverbs 22 and 15, it says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Did you know that sometimes children just have a disposition to be mischievous? And it takes chastisement sometime to get it out of their system. You just have to stay on top of them. All of us that have had more than one child recognize that they're different. And if you've only had one child, you can look around at the children they go to school with, and you know their children are different. One of them, just anything you say, they want to please you. And the other one is, they don't care what you say. They want to do what's on their mind. And so sometimes children are just, it seems like they're just up to mischief. If they're awake, they're thinking of something to do that's going to cause a disaster. It just seems that way. But, you know, discipline sometimes is what's necessary. Some of them you can explain to them, hey, this could be dangerous. This is going to waste, you can't take the commodities in the cabinet and build sandcastles out of it, or you can't do this kind of thing. It's expensive. You explain that to some little children, it's like, oh my, I won't ever do that again. And the other one is like, just turn your back, and here I go again. And it takes discipline to get that out of their system. It just does. One more verse, and we'll call it enough. Proverbs 29, verse 15. And Proverbs uses the word rod many times. And rod sometimes can come across and portray something that's harsh. And I want us to be very careful here. I do not believe that God intends for the mother or the father to be harsh. But there has to be some discipline. There has to be consequences. There has to be training. And there has to be an atmosphere that's conducive for children. In Proverbs 29, in verse 15, it says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." If there's no discipline, if there's no training, if there's no atmosphere that's conducive, if we don't have that in our vision, it'll bring us heartache. You know, I've got a dog at the house, and he's just a friend dog, all right? That's all he is. Anything that he's learned is just kind of by accident. You know, I think sometimes he knows how to shake hands, and then other times I realize he really don't. But he does like to put his paw up on you, and if you catch him just right, he'll shake hands with you. But as far as him coming up and just offering his paw and wanting you to shake, I don't think he thinks about that. But he likes to play. And you know the reason that he don't know very much? Because I haven't tried to train him. That's why he don't know very much. And you know why he's not a very responsible dog? It's because I haven't trained him to be responsible. I like my dog. And you'll like your children. You'll love your children. But you know, if we don't take the initiative, if we don't have a vision for them, they'll break our hearts. They will. So this is what I'm trying to say. Anything that we go about in life, we need the vision. What's my objective? Where am I headed? Where's this path going to lead to? I need a vision to know how to guide my home. I need a vision for my spiritual life. I need a vision for my marriage. I need a vision for my children. And I need, where do I want them to go? I'm going to tell you where I want my children. I want my children to be able to speak with the enemies in the gate. I want everybody's children to be there. And I want my children to be able to resist the temptations and the enemy's forces that's in this world. I want them to be able to take a stand against the wrong that's out there. Lord, help us have a vision for our children. You pray for me.